4-0 Flames.
You can put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hey, happy Thursday and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It's Thursday, February 20th. With Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, my name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Flames Talk's been back now for 3 days since our hiatus. Flames don't play again until Sunday. The trade deadline is 7 games away.
Yeah.
And what, 2 weeks away?
Two weeks tomorrow. Yep. Yeah,
so we're
2 weeks tomorrow.
As we're talking right now, we're 15 days away from the 2025 trade deadline.
Crazy, isn't it?
It is fast approaching. So, hello, Wes Gilbertson.
Hey, Pat.
With such disdain.
Hello, Pat.
Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. It's Steinberg along with you, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's time for a Flames Talk mailbag. It's the second one of the month, but we try to do these once or twice a month. And just knowing the stretch drive begins on Sunday, the Flames are in nowhere near as rosy a spot as they were. 3 points back of a playoff spot, even games played with Vancouver. However, still lots of belief inside that locker room, still lots of kind of that FU mentality when it comes to the rest of the hockey world. How do we feel about the Flames down the stretch? How do we feel about Dustin Wolf's workload down the stretch? How do the next 7 games between as we're speaking right now and the trade deadline, how do those 7 games in your mind impact the way Craig Conroy should go about his business? And a whole lot more. Tyson Berry's on waivers on Thursday. Looks like his Flames career has come to an end. You got a question? Get it in at 960-960. Leave your name if you want, and we'll try to get through as many questions on our Flames Talk mailbag as possible. Get them in early because, as always, they usually come a little bit more hot and heavy towards the end, so we'll spend a little bit more time on questions in the early stages. So get your questions in at 960-960. Are you ready to go? Are you ready to rock?
Hit me.
Let's start with Nathan. Nathan's kicking us off. Says, do the boys think Parekh has a chance of making the team next year, or do you think he should have a year to grow in the American League? Well, first of all, I encourage you to go listen to our chat from Wednesday's Flames Talk with Zane Parekh. He joined the program and was very adamant about what his mindset's going to be coming into training camp in September. He's coming to camp to win a spot. He believes he can play in the NHL. He's coming with one thing in mind, and that is to be in the NHL next year. Whether it happens or not depends on him and how much he's grown this year. The first thing I would say is Parekh is not eligible to play in the American League next year because he was drafted out of the CHL. Next year, he either plays in Saginaw or he plays with the Flames. He could play on another OHL team if a trade were to happen, but he's either in the Ontario League or he's in the NHL. He cannot play next season with the Wranglers until his OHL season comes to an end. So that is one piece of clarity, but do we think he's got a chance of making the team next season?
Yeah, I do think he has a chance, and I actually think that the fact he is not American Hockey League eligible probably bolsters his chance of making the NHL
completely.
Team. And you know, something I said off air yesterday, we had that great chat with Parekh, and then we were talking about him and his future in one of the commercial breaks. And one of the things I said is, you know, I wonder if the Flames knew that the NCAA news was coming, and by that I mean CHL players maintaining NCAA eligibility. I wonder if they would have signed Zane Parekh to an entry-level deal when they did, or if they might have encouraged him to go spend a year in the NCAA as that sort of next competitive step. I think you can get more accustomed to seeing that. You're going to see drafted prospects not sign entry levels right away, play in the CHL, and then similar to what Eric Jameson's going to do at Denver next year, similar to what I would anticipate Henry Muse.
Yep.
Will ultimately wind up doing, although I don't believe that's fait accompli.
Ooh.
Not bad, hey? Not bad.
Très bien.
Anyway, back to Zane Parekh. I think the fact that he can't play in the NCAA and can't play in the AHL is going to force the Flames to give him a really long look. And I wonder if you even do a little bit of a, I'm going to call it sort of an internship model where you keep him on the NHL roster and don't plan to play him in 82 games. Maybe you plan to play him in 40 some. You really try to work him through some of the growing pains. You have him on the Leo Carlson plan.
I was going to say Leo Carlson.
Where he's trying to put some muscle mass on with your trainers. I think I see both sides. I'm not sure as he rockets towards 100 points that there's a whole lot of sense in sending him back to the CHL. But I also wonder if he's NHL ready. And I do think sort of a half season of NHL with some extra development might be in the cards there.
I believe the Flames were fully open to him making the NHL roster this past training camp. I fully, from what I understand, they were ready to make it happen if he showed he could be knocking on the door. And even if it wasn't abundantly clear, like, you know, Matthew Tkachuk came to training camp, you're like, this guy's an NHLer, right?
Yeah.
Like, there was no doubt about that. And you didn't really need to see Matthew's 9-game debut. Like, Matthew's going to be in the NHL. But had Zane Parekh been like around it and knocking on the door, I believe the Flames were fully ready to give him at the very least a few NHL games, up to the 9 games, to see whether or not NHL regular season action was way over his head. Zane showed, as he told us on Wednesday, he was a lost puppy at training camp. It was a complete foreign learning curve to him, and it showed. He's gone back to Saginaw. And after a slow start statistically, he is torching the Ontario League, as Wes said, is rocketing to 100 points. I'm with you. Unless it is like abundantly clear again that the NHL is way too above his head at the age of 19, I think there's a very good chance he starts the year with the team. And a similar program to Leo Carlson, I don't think is out of the question. And I think that because he doesn't have really much else to prove in junior hockey, I don't know, unless, again, it's so clear that the NHL is going to hurt him as opposed to help him. I think the Flames will enter training camp with the idea that they'd like to keep him in the NHL and to start him in the NHL. And you've always got that, you know, there's the 10-game threshold of your entry-level deal kicking in. And remember the Leon Draisaitl rule? When he started in the NHL and he didn't play his first full season, he got way past the 10 games, but I believe it's 40 games as to once you get into your 40th game, you earn a year towards unrestricted free agency. And I wonder how much that might play into their decision-making as well.
Yeah.
Long story short, I'm with Wes. I think he's got a strong chance of starting the season in the NHL next year. He, of course, being Zane Parekh.
Good. Good question from our leadoff hitter, Nathan. What else we got?
Spencer's up next. Flames Talk mailbags underway. Get your questions in at 960-960. How many starts are you thinking Dustin Wolf gets for the last bit of the season? Also, curious on your thoughts on Pospisil centering the fourth line. I can see why they'd keep him on the wing in case they bring him up the lineup, but I think center could be a great place for him to really carve out a place on the team right now. Let's start with Dustin Wolf, who will be the number one goalie, and you can bet he's starting against San Jose on Sunday night.
Yeah.
There's a back-to-back coming up on the weekend, like the following weekend. They go back-to-back Saturday, Sunday. That's probably the next time you see Dan Vladar, if we're being perfectly frank here. They've got 27 games to go. What is a good number for Dustin Wolf between now and the end of the regular season?
Well, and I just looked this up and actually was shocked by the answer. The 27 games remaining only includes 2 sets of back-to-backs. 3?
3.
You're telling me 3?
I see the weekend coming up.
Yeah.
I see March 17th and 18th.
In Toronto and
New York.
New York.
And then I see March 31st and April 1st in Colorado, Utah.
The old
I had to do a
the old calendar flip got me.
I had to do a double take. I'm like, there's 31 or 32? No, there's 31 days in March,
so,
you idiot.
So still a very small number.
Three back-to-back sets.
Yeah. 27 games to go. I will be stunned if Dustin Wolf, assuming he maintains a strong level, I'll be stunned if he doesn't start 20. And I think even about 22 is realistic.
I was going to say 22. Vladar starts the three back-to-backs. Yeah. And again, there's a lot of assuming here. You know, we talked to Kevin Woodley earlier on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk. He talked a little bit about the workload, and it is a hectic, heavy workload between Sunday and the end of the season. But if we don't see a discernible drop, I would say 20 to 22, and my number would have been 22 is kind of what my ballpark would be for Dustin Wolf starts.
And discernible drop, I would say in two regards. You know, a discernible drop in Dustin Wolf's play, like a sign that fatigue might be starting to become a factor, as I believed it was right into the break.
Yep.
And also, if the Flames drop out of the race, I think you're gonna take that down a notch too. Like I think suddenly you maybe consider getting Cooley a few games or what have you. You're not certainly not shutting Dustin Wolf down, but if you're not in, you know, if you've got 10 or 11 days left in the season and your fate is kind of sealed and Dustin Wolf's already played 50 some games this season, I think you're trying to rein it in a little there.
As for Pospisil centering the fourth line,
I knew there was a second question there.
I'm all for it. And I'm not saying that you have to throw Rooney to the Wolves and put him on waivers too. I think there is something to be said at some point here if Daniil Miramanov's game doesn't pick up, to potentially think about him in the American League as well.
Yeah.
Even if it's not for the rest of the season, even for a few weeks.
I totally agree.
Get yourself down to 7D and allow yourself to have an extra forward. Now, because right now you can kind of do the, you can do the 8-13. I would like to see them do an extra forward regardless, but I still think sending Miramanov and maybe looking at a couple extra forwards might not be the worst idea. See what you got with some different fourth line combinations. And that would include to me trying Pospisil down the middle. Why not? Like maybe it doesn't work, but Pospisil, Klapka, Lomberg. You telling me that wouldn't be an interesting
chaos
fourth line?
Yeah.
Or maybe you go another direction and maybe it's Sam Morton and giving him a few games down the middle and go Morton, Lomberg, and Pospisil. But I do think as the Flames continue to search for their fourth line fit, which has been months now until they've had since they've had a good one, I think Pospisil giving him a run down the middle on that fourth line, there's absolutely something to that.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, except that I'd say barring about a 4 or 5 game losing streak out of the break, I just have trouble envisioning a scenario where Craig Conroy hasn't acquired a right-handed center before the deadline. And I really don't think it's going to be a big fish. Like I'm not talking Dylan Cousins here, but I'd be pretty surprised if that jarring, drastic need for a right-handed face-off man is not addressed if the team remains in the playoff mix. And I know if Craig Conroy's listening right now, he's probably thinking, Wes, do you have any idea how few right-handed face-off men are available out there?
Yeah, you think I haven't bleeping tried?
I do get that. I just, my maybe retort, if that's the right word for, well, do they try Pospisil at center? Yeah, except what they need is pretty glaring. Like, at some point, there's got to be a righty in there. And I think if you have a righty who can maybe win the odd draw in a shorthanded situation, it helps you stay in the fight a little longer.
From how many right shot
not
centers
enough
do the Flames have? No, I'm just, how many right shot centers actually available do we think that they could actually go out and find
it? Even if you look at the number of right-handed centers period, it's a fairly small list. I don't think, like, you know, you're gonna see Jake Evans probably get moved from Montreal for way too high of a price for Jake Evans. I don't know if you're even looking at a guy who's playing with someone else in the American Hockey League to go in sort of a platoon with Rooney as your fourth line center. I think it has to be a priority for Craig Conroy if he wants to give his team a chance to earn that wild card spot.
Per NHL.com, there are 97 listed centers with a right shot who have gotten into NHL games this year. And I'm just looking right now at potential, like there's, could you do a Vinny Hinostroza? Maybe Sam Lafferty's a guy in Buffalo that would interest me. Could you get a Ty Dellandrea out of San Jose? I'm thinking about teams that you could actually, could you get a Nachari out of Pittsburgh, depending on where the Penguins are?
Right.
Or could you get a Craig Smith out of Chicago? Like, these are the type of names that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, because I don't think you want to pay a massive, you know, Jake Evans is a guy who I think the acquisition cost is going to make the Flames blush and should at this point of their, you know, transformation, at this point of their rebuild or retool or whatever you're calling it. I don't think you're using a bunch of assets on a rental righty, but if you can get one for a late round pick, especially with the draft capital that you've managed to amass already, I think you're looking to do that.
A few other names on teams that are well out of it. Colton Sisson's in Nashville. Yeah. But that, he's a pretty good bottom, like third, fourth center. I think that would cost you.
Yeah.
Luke Kunin, I think would cost you out of San Jose quite a bit. And then you're starting to get into, like, I think Nick Dowd, but why would Washington be moving Dowd? I know he's unrestricted, but why would they be moving him? Now, you know, now you're getting into past the names I've mentioned, you're getting into guys that aren't getting moved, right? So there's not a lot of options.
Like
there.
Nathan MacKinnon, you mean?
Yeah, I don't think MacKinnon, he would fill Calgary's void. I think that you could make an argument.
Check a lot of boxes here.
I think, like, Conroy, if you're listening, if MacKinnon's available, like, go get him.
Make that
for
happen.
Sure.
Yeah, throw in another second if you have to.
This reads, not saying the Flames should trade Rasmus Anderson, but if they do, is it best to do it this trade deadline when he's younger or next for the highest return? Is the upcoming draft supposed to be a good one? That's another factor. Curious what your thoughts are. I know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
And so I'll let you take this one.
I'm going to split the difference on this one. If I am moving Rasmus Anderson, I'm not doing it at either deadline. I'm doing it in the summer.
Yeah. And you made that case 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was like, oh, that's, I can't even argue that, because I think that there, because your point, I'm stealing and regurgitating your points, but your point
might
was
be the smartest thing you say today.
Without question, it will be. That, or thanks for joining us. Those will be I think there's a potential that there's more return for him in the summertime, in the off season, than what you'd get at the trade deadline. The cap's going up. Now you're getting potentially 20 teams interested instead of 6.
Yeah.
I just think that you've got way more opportunity to actually cash in, plus a little bit more of an idea as to what that contract situation is going to look like. I think summertime, if you're going to do it.
Yeah.
If I were to go power rankings of between now and the trade deadline, summertime or sometime next season, I would go summertime number one with a bullet, followed by next season at 2, and distant third would be between now and the trade deadline.
I think what we've started to see more and more frequently too is, it's just so, the parity is such, and it's so tough to win a Stanley Cup, that teams that are acquiring at the deadline are looking to give up nothing off their active roster except a salary that they're trying to get rid of, right? And if I'm Craig Conroy and I've determined that it's in my best interest to trade Rasmus Anderson, and I'm on record as saying I don't think that is the road they're going down, but if I'm looking to trade Rasmus Anderson, I don't just want a first round pick or a prospect who's a ways away. I'd like to get some guys who can immediately be part of that young core, that supplemental core that I'm building, right? Connor Zarian, Matt Cornell. I want guys in that early 20s age range just as badly as I'd like another first round pick. And so I think those are the kind of players also that you have more likelihood of prying away in the summer.
This one from Francesca. What's going on with Jeremy Poirier, and how would you predict his future with the organization? What's going on right now? It's been kind of, if you talk to different people around the Wranglers who have been watching the Wranglers, it's been a difficult-ish season for him. And it feels like maybe the defensive strides that he had been making have kind of flatlined here a little bit, and there still are some significant defensive deficiencies in Poirier's game. That does not mean that he is no longer part of the picture. That does not mean they're going to cut bait with him or anything like that. But I think it's fair to say, Wes, there's still a lot of development needed when it comes to Poirier.
Yeah, I think you put that quite well. I mean, he is the leading scoring defenseman on the Wranglers. You see his name on the score sheet often enough that I understand why people are wondering why he hasn't gotten his opportunity. Whenever I ask about who's playing well on the blue line, Jeremy Poirier is not a name that pops up, because I don't even know if it's frustration. It's just he hasn't taken that next step defensively. He's not a guy that they would trust in those high leverage, high pressure sort of situations. And, I'm not, you know, if Jeremy Poirier is listening, I'm not breaking any news. Like, he knows what he needs to work on. He knows why earlier this week Jan Kuznetsov and Ilya Solovyov got the promotion and he didn't, right? Like, he gets it, but that remains very much a work in progress.
This one from Dylan in Carrington. Which veterans do you think they would sell off if this next road trip goes poorly? If these next seven games bring the Flames crashing a little further down the standings, and right now they're still very much in striking distance, they're a game and a half out of a playoff spot. If all of a sudden that turns into 2.5 or 3 games, I think now all of a sudden they really are actively opening the door for American League players. So I think Vladar really enters the conversation even more so. I think Rooney, I think Hanley, I think Miramanov, and I'm not suggesting that you're going to be getting hauls for these guys or anything like that, but I think kind of those fringe guys all of a sudden start getting put out there and seeing if you can get a late round pick for one of those guys. So now all of a sudden, you're talking about players that have been getting into NHL games, but now they're no longer blocking ways for younger players. So now Solovyov, Kuznetsov, Klapka, players like that have a little bit more of a path to playing NHL games in the backstretch of the season. Those would be the guys I would be talking about.
Yeah, and I know there's lots of people listening who want to know about names like Kadri and Coleman and Anderson. I have a hard time envisioning a scenario where you're realistically looking to move any of those type guys. Now, if you start to fall and rival GM phones Craig Conroy and says, geez, we'd love to bring Blake Coleman in, let's talk about the price, you absolutely would have to consider it. But based on where they're at in the standings, based on the way that they're trying to build this, which is maintaining an older core while those younger core pieces blossom into being important contributors, like that's the game plan. And so I don't see them firing some of those big names out the door. I'll give you Joel Hanley is a guy I think is actually going to become an attractive chip at deadline day. And I say that when I say attractive chip, I don't think you're getting a huge return for him, but defensive depth is always so popular on deadline day. I see that as a guy. I'll give you two other names that I wonder about. I don't think they're looking to, and I shouldn't say don't think, I know they're not interested in moving Braden Pahal, and yet with what he can bring and his potential value, I wonder how many calls they get about Pahal, and if they've really started to fade, whether they consider it. Like, that's a guy you claimed off waivers a year ago. I'm a believer that he can play on the third pairing in Calgary for a long time, so I'm not looking to get rid of him. But I wonder if you get some calls there. The other guy I wonder about, and we talked about him earlier in this segment, is Martin Pospisil. He's sort of fallen out of Ryan Huska's. He's fallen out of the guys that Ryan Huska has trusted and used the most. He's no longer in that equation. Certainly not saying he couldn't climb back in there, but as the type of guy who can bring a different element to a playoff team, as a guy with a low contract, as a guy with low mileage as a player, albeit due to injury, I wonder if you get some calls on him as well.
Mike and Mackenzie Lake, same idea. What would the chances be if this road trip doesn't go well of getting Cooley in for a stint so they can determine if they can trade Vladar? I don't think, with no disrespect to Devin Cooley, who's having himself a great year in the American League, although since All-Star and since the concussion maybe hasn't been at the same level, but still, he's had a hell of a year. And they absolutely have him part of the plans going forward.
He'll certainly miss Ilya Solovyov if he winds up staying in the National Hockey League for a while.
I don't think that you need to see Cooley in the NHL. I think your decision on Vladar is almost independent of Cooley.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a good offer for Vladar, I think you move him. If you don't, I think you're fine keeping him for the rest of the season and then figuring out what happens in the offseason. I don't think they're related, or I don't think Vladar's immediate future in the next 15 days is tied to Cooley at all.
The roster spots being what they are, I actually doubt that you're moving Dan Vladar without bringing a goalie back in. Like, I just think the acquiring organization that might want to test drive Dan Vladar before free agency needs to send you a goalie to take off their roster. And certainly, if you're the Flames, you're probably not interested in doing that for a goalie who's signed beyond this year.
Yeah.
I could actually see, and I've said this on the show before, the Flames, if they're right there in the mix, coveting a veteran goalie that they can get at a low acquisition cost, someone that you'd maybe trust as both a mentor and a sidekick to Dustin Wolf more than you might be trusting, I'm sorry, Dan Vladar at this point, albeit coming off a really strong performance in his latest start, still only one victory since mid-December. I don't think you're just clearing out Vladar and solely promoting from within is what I'm saying.
Last one before we pause. Ben and Douglasdale, if the Flames tried to put Miramanov on waivers, do you guys think another team would take a chance on him? Maybe, but I'm not, honestly, with the contract and with the struggles he's had this year, I would lean towards he clears.
Me too. I'd be really quite surprised if we're talking about Tyson Barry getting claimed tomorrow, and I'd be equally surprised if Daniil Miramanov was claimed. The Flames have done impressive work with a patchwork defense,
yep,
right?
Yep.
You know, they've got the most out of a very sort of no-name crew of defense, but elsewhere around the league, you're looking and saying, geez, if Miramanov can't get in over Joel Hanley, if Miramanov some nights can't get in over Tyson Barry, what are we maybe missing? Oh, and he's signed for another year. And I would say with the current state of Daniil Miramanov's game and the fact he was a forward for so long, and the fact that while he's an older guy, he has not a ton of pro experience. Like I think it'd be worth the risk to get him to the AHL and just see if you can still make the most of that investment.
1.25 is Miramanov's cap hit for next year as well. It's Pat and Wes. Flames Talk Mailbag is underway. Keep getting your questions in at 960-960. We've got the second half of the hour to keep getting into them, and lots of good questions so far. Hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV. TV at Rogers.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Let's keep the mailbag rolling and just jump right in. A little more rapid fire in the back half of our Flames Talk mailbag. 960, 960, you can still get your questions in. Here's James in Woodbine. Has the Four Nations break helped Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee integrate into the team? And do you see that reflected in their on-ice results for the rest of the season?
Can't hurt.
I can see it.
Yeah, it like, can't hurt.
They've practiced. Well, they've been with the team for how many games they played? Like five games?
Five, yeah.
They've played more games and they've gotten full practices still.
Yeah.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the first three full practices for Frost and Farabee. Everything else has been a morning skate or a game. So I think by virtue of being around their teammates a little bit more, being on the ice in like 35, 40, 45 minute practices, I think that can only help them get more comfortable and more cohesive in this lineup.
Yeah, and just some of the off-ice comforts, right? Like they played a back-to-back with the Philadelphia Flyers and then got traded. And I'm just going to hazard a guess, probably had a few beers with their suddenly former teammates the night of the trade. Suddenly hopped on a flight to Calgary. Now they're back-to-back. Like, it's just been, it's been crazy, right? I'm sure they were literally uprooted, and so I think just being able to kind of settle in, like they're no longer living in the hotel. They've got a place, you know, they've found places to live in Calgary. They have a vehicle. They don't need Matt Coronato to pick them up outside the hotel. Like, just some of the comforts for such creatures of habit, I think can become important too. And that's why, like, I don't think Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee were at home over the break studying the systems every day. It's, you know, it's not like an NFL playbook where suddenly they right. know all the plays in Calgary. It's just, I think those comforts can't possibly do anything but help.
Yep, I agree. Frank in Calgary, is Kadri a Flame in 15 days?
Yes.
Yes. Tim says, I've heard his name mentioned a couple of times the last couple of days. Can you tell me how Hunter Brustevich's season has gone so far and what his chances are of being with the big club next year? That's from Tim in Moose Jaw. How I think he's got a chance of being in the conversation. I think that he turned a lot of heads in this training camp and now in his first professional season continues to grow as a player. I would not put strong money on him starting in the NHL next year, but I would put strong money on him getting NHL games next year.
Yeah, I want to preface this by saying, you know, like a lot of our Wranglers research is you bump into somebody at the rink and you're just kind of shooting it and you ask them about two or three guys. I haven't asked anybody about Brustevich for a while. So I want to preface this by saying I can't give a really up-to-date answer from the conversations I've had around the rink, but I do know after sort of a slow start, both Brustevich started to feel better about his game and the Flames and Wranglers brass felt like there was some really steady improvement. One of the things that has been a focal point for both the player and the organization is just doing a better job of getting pucks through traffic to the net. That's something he found at the pro level was a real challenge, is just like, for whatever reason, when the pros are always in the right spot, the shin pads look like they're three times bigger than they are in junior. And he really struggled to get pucks through, and that's been more of a strength lately. I also think, you know, right now Kuznetsov and Soloviov are both up. I think Pat and I expect one of those guys will be heading back probably to join the Wranglers for their road trip. But if a key guy comes up to the Flames, you're going to get more important minutes for Brustevich in the minors, and that will only benefit him. Do I see him starting next season with the big club, especially with what we talked about and maybe needing to find a spot for Parekh? I don't think I do, but I would make sure that that doesn't sound like me saying his development is not sort of right on the track they thought it would be.
Yep, I think that's fair. And I think it's fair to suggest that Kuznetsov probably goes back to the Wranglers.
The most sense.
I mean, Solovyov is the guy that they believe can play. I think Solovyov's the priority keeping up right now. So I think you send Kuznetsov to the Wranglers. They got a 3-game road trip through California. They'll leave on Friday, play on Saturday, keep Solovyov up. Maybe he plays on Sunday with the Flames. Maybe he doesn't. But I think Solovyov's the guy they'd like to keep up. And Kuznetsov would be the guy going back to the American League, you would think.
Do you think, buddy, you always have a great read on this stuff. Like, could it be as simple as Ryan Huska wanted to see Kuznetsov in a couple practices?
I think that's exactly, I know that's exactly what it is. Yeah. Both the recalls of both guys was as much about seeing both of them in practices. And I think the reason why they didn't just recall Solovyov is because they're neck and neck right now. And I think it was neck and neck on recalling Solovyov prior to the Seattle game and getting him in. I think it was neck and neck Solovyov and Kuznetsov. Solovyov's got a little bit of a leg up right now, but I know Ryan Huska wanted to see those guys just a little bit in practice, see what they've got, because inevitably I think this conversation's going to stick around in the final 27 games.
It's a good message to everybody, right?
Agreed.
It's a good message to Solovyov that we really like what you did with your one opportunity before the break. It's a good message to Kuznetsov, even if he does wind up going back in the next couple of days. Hey, you know, you're close. You check out the extra zeros on your latest paycheck. Makes a big difference to spend a couple of days in the NHL, and you're close. And quite frankly, it's a message to a guy like Artem Grushnikov that you're not as close as we'd like you to be.
Yep.
And might bump him a little bit as well.
Does Vladar finish the season with the Flames? My answer is yes.
Okay, I'll go no then.
No? They'll find a taker between
this one's a coin flip for me, and the one thing that you're not doing, because you like the way that your goaltending tandem is working, especially you like the way that it's working relationship-wise, and you like what the competition has brought out in Dustin Wolf. Like, would you prefer a backup option that had better numbers this season? Yes. But are you trading Dan Vladar for a fourth round pick just to say you cashed in Dan Vladar? No, you're not. And as you pointed out, since returning from a concussion, Devin Cooley's numbers have not been as good. You're trying to get a wild card spot. You're not suddenly going with a rookie goalie and a backup who's played 6 NHL games. And so I think it's possible. I'm probably in coin flip range on this one that you do deal Vladar, but you're not doing it just because you're not. I understand, you know, well, anyone who's a UFA, get whatever you can for them. That's just not where you're at with Dan Vladar.
And I that's kind of where I'm at, which is why I think there's more value in keeping him for the rest of the year, letting Cooley continue to cook in the American League.
Sure.
Have Cooley up with the team next year, and have a little bit more. Like, I don't think you're as concerned about Vladar sitting for a good chunk of the stretch drive. I think you would be concerned about Cooley going from playing almost every night to barely playing. And so that's why, unless you're getting something good for Vladar, I'm more in favor of him staying with the team.
And Dan Vladar has been available for a trade for a year and a half, right? Let's call a spade a spade. Dan Vladar, if you wanted to trade for Dan Vladar anytime in the past 18 months, he could have been had for the right offer. And so, you know, I don't think we're talking about a scenario where the Flames suddenly make him available and Craig Conroy needs, you know, an extra phone charger because his is buzzing so often. I think if there was a real serious suitor for Dan Vladar, we'd be talking about Dan Vladar in past tense as a Calgary Flame.
Dylan in Revelstoke.
I knew Dylan and Revy would come through for us.
And it's a good one. What kind of return would you expect out of Pahal, and would it be worth it? Let me give you this as a comparable. 2023 trade deadline, Luke Shen got Vancouver a third-round pick in a deal that and got a whole lot more than I think Vancouver would have ever thought when they entered that season with Shen on the roster, which was his second year in Vancouver. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility at all that a team going to the playoffs looks at Braden Pahal's physicality, steadiness, growth, age, feistiness, competitiveness, all of that.
Yeah.
I don't think a top 90 pick is out of the question at all. In fact, I don't think the Flames would be doing it unless they could get themselves something like a third and a fifth or something like that.
I was just going to say that would be what it would take for me to be willing to move him because he's one of three Flames defensemen who's played every game this season. Like, they have a lot of trust in him, and yet we just finished talking about Solovyov and Kuznetsov. In their case, both left-handed shots, but both guys who can play a sort of, I wouldn't call Kuznetsov especially rugged, but they're guys who can play more of a stay at home, maybe try to bring a little bit of a snarl to your roster. For anyone who's just catching this now, I really don't think the Flames are eager to trade Braden Pahal, but if I was the GM for a contender and I saw what Braden Pahal brought, and literally brought it every night, he's as consistent of a player in what he does as the Flames have, especially on their blue line. If I saw the contract extension, knowing, you know, what sort of value there could be there, he's a guy I'd call about.
And I would too. And I think, you know what? I believe Shen was a UFA that year. Pahal's got 2 years left at a very palatable cap.
Yeah, what was the cap hit?
1.1875, so a little less than $1.2 million.
Yeah.
I think you could maybe, like, I don't think for a young defenseman who has played every game that brings what he brings, at the only time that I could see a player like Pahal being able to get this type of return would be at the trade deadline when teams are absolutely desperate for defensive depth.
Yeah.
But I think you could get a third plus. I don't think it is completely bonkers to suggest you might be able to hold a team up for a second for a guy of that age and for the fact that you can, even if he turns into a 6-7 on another team, you know what you're getting and you're getting some good depth.
And especially as the sort of, as the pivot point, like when a couple of the obvious names come off the depth defenseman rental market, whoever's left sort of standing there and doesn't get a chair in the game of musical chairs, that's got to be a guy that they call about it. And in addition to all the, you know, things that you've mentioned and we've talked about, the other thing about Pahal is he's been around good teams. It's another appeal of him, right? He was a black ace for the Golden Knights during their run. He won a title in the Western Hockey League. Like, this is a guy who has some exposure, if not experience, to those big games, and I think that just adds to the appeal.
Great stuff on the Flames Talk mailbag.
Oh, you meant the text line.
You know what? And stuff from you.
Okay, I'll take it.
Great stuff on the text line, stuff from Wes, and just straight beep from me.
Do we start chanting Go Canada Go now or just go to commercial?
I think we start to wrap up the hour, in fact, is what we do. Outstanding stuff on the text line. Thank you for all your inputs on the Flames Talk mailbag at 960-960. We'll do another one either right after or right before the trade deadline. We'll see how things go. But as always, appreciate the time, appreciate all the input, love it. And thanks to Shan Virgie and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers this hour. Wes Gilbertson is on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.